needy women.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
You either have grace or you don't.
Read Grace's work in The Spectator and see her recommended reading at gracecurlyshow.com.
She's a nasty woman. She's a really nasty woman.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley.
Grace Curley, host of The Grace Curley Show.
Grace. Grace Curley.
Grace!
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show, and thank you for joining us. This is from the Boston Herald. Seven Chinese nationals were indicted Tuesday in connection with what the feds have described as a multi-million dollar conspiracy that allegedly included the smuggling of illegal aliens to work at grow houses scattered across the two states, meaning Maine and Massachusetts. Someone who has been on top of this story and many other stories just like it is Steve Robinson from the Maine Wire. Steve, tell us about the scale of this bust and what we're really looking at here.
Well, this is being advertised as the takedown of a ringleader of the Chinese drug trafficking conspiracy generally. But I would say it's more like you're knocking off one McDonald's or 7-Eleven location out of a franchise. This is a relatively small bust compared to the overall scope and scale of Chinese drug trafficking operations in New England, but it is significant. The operation that the Department of Justice has launched, thanks entirely to President Trump winning the election last year, is called Operation Take Back America. And unfortunately, for 4 years, if not longer, we had Operation Give America Away, which necessitated Operation Take Back America. So there's much more work that needs to be done in order to bring an end to the Chinese drug trafficking generally. But I think we learned a few very significant things from the 22-page indictment that was filed in the District of Massachusetts this week. And one of them is that the Biden administration knew for a very long time exactly what was happening. And by that, I mean the Justice Department, the U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts, and the U.S. Attorney for Maine, Darcy McAway, knew what was happening. They knew that Chinese drug cartels were paying to smuggle Chinese illegal aliens across the southern border, bringing them to New England, stealing their passports, and then using them like indentured slaves at cannabis houses in Massachusetts and in Maine, and profiting extremely from those activities. And they took very, very limited actions. I would say that the pressure was great on Darcy McAway when she was a U.S. attorney here in Maine to do something, anything, just because of how offensive the operations had become and how much attention we were drawing to them. So she seized maybe four properties, but there was never anything on the scope and scale of what we saw this week with the indictments in Massachusetts. But, literally none of the investigative work that went into these indictments happened under Trump. It was all done under Biden. It took a U.S. attorney willing to pull the trigger. Like the entire operation was laid out. The search warrants had been executed. They knew everything. It's just the former U.S. attorney under Biden didn't want to stop it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Maine Wire here and kind of your role in all of this, because it really can't be understated. And I know you've been getting national attention. Tucker Carlson had you on his podcast. It's been getting a lot of well-deserved accolades for the research and the investigative reporting you guys have done. But in the case of this indictment, it's actually interesting because the ringleader was also a fan of your work, it seems.
He was. He was a reader, Grace. I don't know if he was a fan, but it does, in the indictment, it does say that Jinxiang Chen and his cohort Yu Xiang Wu were sharing on WeChat a Chinese version of, X or a messaging app. They shared the very first investigative report I filed in November of 2023 about the Chinese drug empire in Maine. And so, 4 days after I published it, they were sharing it. and talking about it, and they were concerned about the level of attention and publicity that was being drawn to them. I think that's significant. I think it points to the impact that our work, our investigative journalism, was having. But I will say, if they'd gone to asmaine.com and signed up for my mailing list, they could have been reading it the day it came out rather than waiting for 4 days, 4 whole days to read the work. And I hope too that they've watched the documentary that we published with Tucker Carlson last week. These individuals don't feature into it because I don't think they spent a lot of time in Maine, but we are in the process of investigating and unraveling their touch points in the state of Maine. But again, I would say we're dealing with dozens, if not hundreds, of different families or operations or triads, however you'd like to refer to them, that are operating sometimes in cooperation, but also independently, and are also committing crimes against each other. We've reported previously about attacks and burglaries that have been carried out that have the hallmarks of triad on triad violence. Burglaries where hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash are stolen, but they go unreported by the victims, or maybe they're reported a week later. And where that money came from is often not easy to explain by the victims. So we know that there's this kind of beneath the layer of civilized society here in New England, there's a criminal underworld where people are fighting for hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars in proceeds from cannabis, both legal and illegal.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about the just the sheer amount of money that was being made here in these marijuana sales, soaring in the millions. What the purchases that are going on after this money is being made, does that kind of tell a different story as well? Like, what are they using this money to buy? Is it just luxury goods or people buying property? Where does that lead you?
Well, I'll say that this is the first glimpse that we've had into the beneficiaries of this scheme. By and large, our investigative work, visiting hundreds of these properties in Maine, what we've encountered are the victims, the indentured servants who are, in many cases, elderly Chinese immigrants, sometimes legal, sometimes illegal, who are coerced or forced or given meager wages to come up here and work as cannabis farmers in illicit pot houses. Even the people who have been arrested are not living the high life and driving around in fancy cars. The people, the seven individuals who were indicted in the District of Massachusetts, seem to be at the top of the cash pile. They're spending large amounts of money. They have luxury watches, like $60,000 watches. You know, they found $1.5 million hidden in a Porsche. They've got houses that are nicer than the vast majority of Mainers, can afford, and probably the vast majority of people in Massachusetts as well. So these people were definitely living the high life. But this is, again, a small part of a much bigger operation, and it's happening in California. It's happening in Oklahoma. It's happening in Washington State. It's going to be happening more in Ohio and Tennessee, as Ohio has just legalized some cannabis, adult use cannabis. Wherever they can blend in and camouflage, they view it as a low risk activity where they can make a ton of money. And this shows just how lucrative and successful it can be. And I can only hope that Operation Take Back America extends to Maine. Maine still doesn't have a U.S. attorney. Trump hasn't appointed one yet. It still seems like there's some behind-the-scenes wrangling with Senator Collins and President Trump over exactly who that U.S. attorney should be. But I would hope that it's someone who shares the president's vision and is supportive of Operation Take Back America.
Yeah, Steve, here in the Commonwealth, the Mass GOP spokesperson made a comment about this indictment and was really praising the Massachusetts U.S. Attorney Leah Foley for acting decisively to bring fugitives to justice who are allowed to operate with impunity under Democratic leadership. Which brings me to my next question. Maura Healey made a comment, the governor here in Massachusetts, made a comment to the Boston Herald that she was grateful for the bust of the alleged network of Chinese grow houses. Do you believe that? Do you think she's happy to see this all going on?
Well, it depends. I mean, she's probably grateful to see any distraction from how horribly she's mismanaged the shelter situation in Massachusetts. She's got quite a few scandals, so anything that distracts from that, she might actually be grateful for. Is she grateful that the operation was taken offline? I don't really know. In Massachusetts, you know, I've been following the reporting of Philip Lenzicki from the Daily Caller News Foundation and the flow of money from Chinese nationals connected to the Chinese Communist Party to Democratic politicians seems fairly significant and undercovered. And you do have to wonder how much of the illicit proceeds that are being earned through this drug trafficking are being used to buy political protection. And they're certainly not buying political protection from Republicans, not in New England. But, you know, the Governor Healey's comments about this, it's more than Governor Mills has said about it. For 600 days, we've been reporting story after story, bust after bust, exposing the one of the biggest criminal conspiracies in the state's history, active in the state.
She hasn't said one word about it, Steve.
She hasn't said a single word about it. And you know, I hate to give another shameless plug for the documentary, but at TuckerCarlson.com, you can watch our documentary where we try to ask her and she dodges our questions. We hang out at her office and she runs away from us. And we even discovered, Grace, that her brother, who is a real estate attorney, has done business, has helped with real estate transfers and notary services for individuals in China transferring properties that were illicit marijuana grows to their ownership. So the governor's older brother has actually done business with Chinese drug traffickers, and still she hasn't commented on it. And the local main media...
Oh, Steve, I think we're just losing you now, but I am running out of time. I'm sure he was going to say the local main media hasn't done a great job of covering it. I'm not a mind reader, but I have to assume that's where he was going with that sentence. Everyone, make sure you follow Steve on Twitter at BigSteve207. He's the editor at The Main Wire. You can also follow them on social media at The Main Wire. And you can go to TuckerCarlson.com to watch his documentary on this. It's an amazing story, and we're really just scratching the surface here, but... The Main Wire and Steve and a few other journalists seem to be the only ones interested in this massive, massive conspiracy. We'll be right back. We'll take your calls. It's 844-500-4242. When we return, I want to play some sound from the DNC chair, Ken Martin, on this big tent and how Mamdani from New York City and other Democrats can all be part of this big tent together. And also, another point I want to hit on when we return has to do with John Brennan. He's still doing media. You can't keep a good man down. He's still talking to Nicole Wallace about how, you know, he's a victim of Trump's witch hunt. Isn't it funny? The witch hunt's on the other foot now. Summertime is here. That means more warmth, more light, more time to spend outside, more time to have your Raycons in and just do what you enjoy doing, whether that means doing lawn care like Taylor. He's always out there working hard. Taylor, do you wear... Now, here's a question. Do you wear your Raycons? Because I love to wear my Raycons when I'm really doing anything. Walking, doing chores. It makes everything more enjoyable. I can listen to podcasts. I can listen to music. When you're dealing with the chicken coop, is that a Raycon in or a Raycon out moment?
No, I've got to keep my ears up for the rooster that likes to attack me.
Oh.
Yeah, I've got to keep an ear out for him. So I don't really wear them while taking care of the chickens. But I was hoping that today would dry out a little bit so I could get out there, mow the lawn. We've got a party on Saturday, so I was hoping that we could get some dry grass and I could wear my Raycons and enjoy my afternoon. I'm sorry?
Do we have a party on Saturday?
We, as in myself and my wife.
Well, now that I know about it, I might stick my Raycons in and show up. Listen to my own music.
More than welcome to cupcakes.
Now, when you're having a party, Taylor, you let everybody listen to the same music. But when you're at the gym and you don't like the music there, that's a perfect time for the Raycon. So
yes.
If people have, whatever your preference is, not everyone wants to listen to your podcast. You know, not everybody wants to listen. I'm sure there's someone out there who, if you turned on the Grace Curley Show, the entire house might not be on board. I shudder at the thought, but I'm sure that does exist. So that's why you have your Raycons. You can listen to what you want to listen to when you want to listen to it. I love my Raycons. I don't go anywhere without them. And if I do go somewhere without them, I get really mad at myself. I'm like, ugh, I can't believe I forgot my Raycons. So here's what I want you to do. Get your own Raycons. Go to buyraycon.com/curly to get 15% off. Raycon's best-selling everyday earbuds. I really like the purple ones, and there's a bunch of different colors, but those ones are very, very pretty. Again, Raycon offering 15% off their best-selling everyday earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/curly. That's buyraycon.com/curly. We'll be right back. Also, just a side note, don't let me forget this, Taylor. Write this one down. There's a new bike washing machine in Boston that has people, an account put it up on social media hoping to get people excited. Like, look how cool this is. It's a free bike washing machine. The comments, they were not happy. The people were not excited about this. We'll talk more when we come back. Stick with us.
You're listening to the... This is the Grace Curley Show.
Today's poll question is brought to you by Tux Trucks. Shop now at Tux Trucks GMC in Hudson, Mass. For a GMC Sierra 1500, 2500, or 3500 HD. GMC trucks are built to haul and tow more. Hummer pickups, too. That's TuxTrucksGMC.com, TuxTrucksGMC.com. Taylor Cormier is on the board. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurlyShow.com, is which is the most obnoxious euphemism bestowed upon an illegal alien by the media? Maryland father, youth soccer coach, white male, or Cincinnati children's chaplain?
The Maryland father is Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who is the Salvadorian illegal alien who was accused of being a wife beater and also now charged with human trafficking as part of a MS-13 conspiracy. The illegal alien from El Salvador, the youth soccer coach, was charged with murdering one of his players, a 13-year-old boy, and sexually abusing other teen boys. And now for the latest one. The Cincinnati children's chaplain, Taylor, he's an Egyptian national. This is Bill Malugin. He said, here's what's not included in the headline. He's an Egyptian national whose asylum status was revoked during the Biden administration last year, which if you're having your asylum status revoked by Joe Biden, that's like getting fired from the Mass State Police, okay? That's like getting fired from the Secret Service, which apparently doesn't happen even after an attempted assassination on Donald Trump. They put them on 42 days suspended without pay. So for you to be an asylum seeker whose status is revoked under Joe Biden, I cannot imagine how shady of a character you have to be, because they weren't trying to revoke anybody's status. They were giving out status, Taylor, like the Candyman, okay? They were throwing them around like scrumdiddlyumptious bars. They wanted everyone to have this protected status. So that, to me, says a lot. Bill also says he apparently flagged on the FBI terror watch list during a background check, though he claims the fingerprints didn't match his. Sued feds multiple times, met with ICE and FBI for several hours yesterday before being arrested by ICE. But he's the latest victim of the Donald Trump administration. He's the latest victim of Borders Are Tom Homan, of Strong Borders, of ICE. He's their hero now. They're trying to make heroes out of really bad hombres, and it's not working. With all that being said, I'm going to stick with the youth soccer coach.
11% say youth soccer coach. That's last place. 12% say Cincinnati children's chaplain. 20% for white male. And 58% for Maryland father.
And none of it's working, though, because the American people are still very much on board with these deportations. Despite what Karen Bass and Gavin Newsom and all these people want to say, people don't want, this is the craziest part of it, people don't want MS-13 gang members in their parks. They don't want wife beaters are human traffickers in their communities. They don't feel as though that makes them safer. Speaking of Gavin Newsom, we played a cut from him yesterday, Taylor. He's in his typical white button down with the slick back hair. I didn't know he was in South Carolina. He's like campaigning now for president in South Carolina, which is fine because everything's running so smoothly in California that why not take a trip? It's not like he has anything to worry about in his own state, right? We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Jared.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
There's always more to the story when it comes to these illegal aliens. If the media is trying to get you to feel sorry for someone, there's a good chance they're leaving out a great deal of detail. Context is important, Jen Psaki told me once. It's not that important when you're talking about a youth soccer coach or a Maryland father or the latest, this Cincinnati Children's Hospital chaplain. Not so important then. They don't want to tell you that this guy was met with ICE and the FBI for several hours yesterday before being arrested by ICE. They don't want to tell you that he's an Egyptian national whose asylum status was revoked during the Biden administration last year. And again, I repeat myself, but how bad of an hombre do you have to be? How shady of a character do you have to be for the Biden administration to say, sorry, we can't? They were letting in murderers. They were letting in child rapists. They were letting in everybody. And they were doing it via an app. They like couldn't do it fast enough. They're like, we're trying to update this app. We're trying to make it so that everyone, you know, open the floodgates. And so if they were pulling you aside and saying, dude's got to go, then you know it's bad. Oh, speaking of Kamala Harris, I don't want to leave this out. There's been some leaked memos now. Now that everything can be said, now that we can acknowledge reality, it's not just that we can acknowledge that Joe Biden was in cognitive decline. Although I will say, not according to Jasmine Crockett, can I have cut four, Taylor? This is Jasmine Crockett commenting on Biden's mental acuity.
Do you have concerns about the president's health and his mental acuity?
No.
None whatsoever.
I had none. Now, granted, I didn't see Joe Biden every single day, but I did have an opportunity to interact with the president. I never had a concern. If there's anyone that I am concerned about their mental acuity, it is the current occupant.
Yeah, well, that's very convenient because he's concerned about your mental acuity as well. So let's just put this to the test. That's what Trump has suggested, I think. Have an IQ test. You both seem equally concerned about each other's mental acuity. So let's just settle this. But according to Jasmine Crockett, Joe Biden was as sharp as they come. Now we can all admit, unless you're Jasmine Crockett or Kevin O'Connor, the physician who had to plead the fifth, most of us now are okay. It's okay. You're not going to be thrown in like Twitter jail for saying that Joe Biden was off his game. You're not going to be accused of making fun of people with stutters or being insensitive or you know, propagating cheap fakes. You're safe from that now. Just like you're safe if you say maybe the coronavirus started in the Wuhan lab. At one point, that could get you in a whole lot of trouble. It could get you tossed off YouTube. Now, John Stewart saying it, you know, the Democrats are saying it. Now it's okay. The reason I bring this up is because the other part of it that's okay to say is that Kamala Harris ran a terrible campaign. Again, at the time, if you were pointing it out and saying she seems inauthentic, she seems not to be able to really have a clear, concise thought and put it across to the voters. She seems to get lost in a real messy word salad every time she opens her mouth. You were accused of being A, racist, B, sexist, C, a healthy mix of both. But now that everyone wants to make some money for the cash grab and the books are coming out, now you can say all these things. And so this new book, 2024, we played some sound from one of the three authors yesterday, but there was a funny element where they got some leaked memos of what the staffers were trying to get her to do, like the advice from her team. as far as how to turn this sinking ship around. And keep in mind, the media at this point is saying everything's great. Like, it's a happy, happy, joy, joy campaign. We've never seen crowds like this. She's walking on sunshine. Oh, they couldn't get enough. Her in her pantsuit and Beyonce, who came out to say two words and then left. Everything was going swimmingly. Cardi B was reading off of her phone, and Kamala was going to walk away with this. And now we get these memos where it turns out her staffers were basically saying, you have to do everything differently than what you're doing. Anything you're doing, it was the George Costanza Taylor. It was like, everything you're doing is wrong, so let's just do the opposite because it has to be right. And I would say, and if you want to read the memos, I read them today in Politico. And they're these long sheets, like these long, they look like study guides. This is what you should say to this. This is what you should say to that. There's one entire memo about if she goes on Joe Rogan, which of course she didn't have. She didn't even have the guts to host the Al Smith dinner. You think that she's going to, or to show up at the Al Smith dinner. You think she's going to have the guts to go on Joe Rogan? That was a pipe dream.
Joe Rogan.
That was a complete pipe dream. But on that note, though, on that memo, it says, like, here are some of the things you can expect to talk about. You know, you should don't get in the weeds of a disagreement. Just say, hey, we're not going to agree on this, but, and then pivot. Like, really basic stuff that most politicians kind of know how to do already. She clearly didn't know how to do. But one of the things that stood out to me in all of the memos, I think there were four of them, was the fact that her team was telling her, in a little bit of a nuanced way, they were saying, don't be afraid to throw Joe under the bus a little bit. Like, don't be afraid to admit the mistake. Don't be afraid to say, yeah, we should have done more on the border from day one. And she didn't even do that, Taylor. Like, they were giving her the green light to say, okay, the only way you're going to be able to win is if you acknowledge, at least in part, some of the catastrophes that went on over the last 4 years. And she was asked that question by Sonny Hostin, and she still said, no, wouldn't do anything differently. Her team is essentially begging her. They're like, please, please give them a little bit. It will give you more credit if you can admit that there were mistakes were made, as Bill Clinton once said. She couldn't do it. She went everywhere just saying, no, I wouldn't change a thing. She was like Michael Proctor. I wouldn't change a thing. If I could turn back time, no, it was pretty perfect. I think we did a pretty good job. And it's like they wonder why she lost. Now, as far as the Democrat Party goes, things are still a disaster there. I wanted to play this comment from the DNC chair, Ken Martin, who's really not making any friends here. Nobody in the Democrat Party can stand this guy. And this is what he had to say on PBS News about Zohran Mamdani. Now, Zohran is the front runner in this New York City mayoral race. And so far, a lot of Democrats, except for the far left squad members like Bernie Sanders and AOC, a lot of Democrats are keeping him at an arm's length. They don't want to they don't want to say anything negative about him, but they can't embrace him either, because this is the guy who can't condemn the slogan globalize the intifada. And so there are some Democrats who are really trying to walk on eggshells. They're walking a fine line. One of the people is Hakeem Jeffries. He just keeps pivoting away from, you know, are you endorsing him? Another person is this Ken Martin. So listen to his answer about Mamdani. This is Cut 7.
What about concerns from some of your Jewish colleagues in particular about him not outright condemning the phrase globalize the intifada in a recent interview? Some of your Jewish colleagues have said that that could be very disturbing, potentially dangerous. Do you agree with that?
You know, there's no candidate in this party that I agree 100% of the time with, to be honest with you. There's things that I don't agree with Mamdani that he said. But at the end of the day, I always believe, as a Democratic Party chair in Minnesota for the last 14 years and now the chair of the DNC, that you win through addition. You win by bringing people into your coalition. We have conservative Democrats. We have centrist Democrats. We have labor progressives like me. And we have this new brand of Democrat, which is the leftist. And we win by bringing people into that coalition. And at the end of the day, for me, that's the type of party we're going to lead. We are a big tent party. Yes, it leads to dissent and debate, and there's differences of opinions on a whole host of issues. But we should celebrate that as a party and recognize at the end of the day, we're better because of it.
Okay, so I've oftentimes talked about disagreements in the MAGA movement and how I kind of agree with Ken Martin that I don't think disagreements about policy or, for example, like here's an example, Thomas Massey being a fiscal hawk or Rand Paul being mad about the deficit and Trump thinking, no, we got to spend money to make money. We got to get this machine up and running. I don't have an issue with those debates. And I actually find it very interesting and it informs my opinion, which sometimes is an amalgamation of a bunch of different opinions. I think it makes the party stronger. Where I would disagree with Ken Martin is if a faction of that party, if a group inside that big tent of yours, that really isn't that big anymore, it's becoming smaller and smaller according to the last election, but if a group of people inside that big tent think it's okay for the other group of people inside that big tent to be killed as part of an intifada, that's got to be an issue, right? Like, that's not a, oh, we disagree on fiscal policy. That's one part of your party thinks the other part of your party doesn't have a right to exist. Perhaps you need to dig in a bit. Perhaps that is something where you got to take a stand. Call me crazy, but when one guy can't condemn globalize the intifada, that's not a, oh, we're all under a big tent, there's going to be squabbles. That's not a squabble. That's a big, big, big problem for your so-called big tent. Another person dealing with big problems is John Brennan. Actually, do I want to go with John Brennan right now or Michelle Obama? I'll say Michelle Obama for now.
Also have the bike wash.
Yeah, the bike wash. Taylor just reminded me. This is a really short one. You can look on my Twitter. I'm probably going to post about it on the website soon. There was this account. It's called like Only in Boston. And they put up this video of a bike wash that was installed in the city. And it's this giant machine, Taylor. Have you seen it?
I did take a look at the video, yes. It's like a mini car wash, an automated car wash for your bike.
And the account put it up to get people excited. Look how cool this is, and it's totally free. People had to remind this account, nothing's totally free. We're paying for this, and it's stupid. Why are we paying for this fancy bike wash? So I've reached out to City Hall. I want to find out how much the bike wash costs. I'm going to say, Taylor, by looking at it, I'm guessing we're looking at like 200 to 300,000. That would be my guess.
Wow.
I think. I might be overshooting it. But I just read the other day about these fancy new porta potties they're putting in New York, and it costs like $1 million for each one. So I think when you deal with the installation and everything else, sometimes it comes out to a pretty high price tag.
I'm going to be a little more conservative and say 50.
You know, though, for anyone who's ever lived in the city of Boston, you know that's your number one issue. You know, it's not the T running on time. It's not traffic. It's not potholes. It's your bike not having a place to get properly washed for free. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. All right, really quickly here, John Brennan was asked about this new investigation into his handling of the Russia probe on with Nicole Wallace. She seems to be the only one he's comfortable. Like, you never catch him on any of the other networks for obvious reasons. Let's just take a little bit, because I hear a little bit of nervousness coming out of Brennan in this interview. This is Cut 5.
Again, I think that SSCI report, the Mueller investigation, the Durham investigation and review, all of this, I think, again, validates what happened in terms of Russian interference, the conclusions of that assessment that Russia tried to interfere to enhance Donald Trump's prospects in that election, to damage Hillary Clinton, and to undermine the integrity of our election process. Those have really stood up and have been validated and supported by subsequent reviews, very thorough reviews. So again, this is something that I think is made up out of, unfortunately, whole cloth, and they're just trying to see what, you know, they're able to get to stick to the media wall, and how some of these outlets are now taking this, and especially John Ratcliffe's comments that he had on X. And
can you pause
things,
it there?
I
have a few takeaways from that. If you're not familiar with how John Brennan usually does these interviews, you might not notice, but he's usually a real pompous ass. He's usually talking about people going to jail and what are you going to do and why Trump this and that. This is a really demure version of John Brennan. This is a really trepidatious version. He's not his usual self. That's number one. And number two, what he leaves out in all that, which we talked about yesterday at length with Ned Ryan, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts, is the fact that he can say whatever he wants about, I think a lot of this stuff held up. You know what didn't hold up? The Steele dossier. And that was something that, according to reports, not whole cloth, but according to sources, you were the one pushing to put in that intelligence assessment in 2017. You were adamant that that should be included, knowing how bogus it was. In fact, people in the CIA jumped off the project because they didn't want to be associated with such stink. And yet you kept pushing for it. That's the part that if Nicole Wallace was a real journalist, thank God she's not, she would have followed up with, but she didn't. Instead, she just goes, we love you, John. You're such a hero. Thank you for being such a patriot. When we come back, we'll talk to Howie Carr. It's one of the things that people, I think, sometimes forget is that a lot of your confidence comes from your smile. You don't want to be someone who's trying to hide your smile, who's, you know, nervous to flash a full smile in a picture. You want to appreciate your smile, and you want it to be exactly how you always imagined it. And that's why I'm encouraging you to make the first step today. Call Perfect Smiles. I had bottom crooked teeth despite having braces. I had braces a few times, but I just never wore my retainer. And I'm one of those people where my bottom teeth shift. If I'm not on top of it, they're going to shift. And so last year, I started to think about it. I finally brought it up. I said, I think I'm going to go to Perfect Smiles. I'm going to ask them about this. I was hesitant. I didn't know how long the process would take. I got there. It was like a 30-minute consultation. Dr. Tam looked at my teeth. He said, this is the game plan. This is what we're going to do. And now I'm further along in this process. I've been loving it. My teeth are getting so straight. They're exactly what I wanted. And the only reason I'm even sharing it, that part of the story, is because wherever you are in your journey, if you feel like, oh, I have so much work to do with my smile, or I just have a little tweak, it doesn't matter where you fall on that spectrum. Perfect Smiles can help you. There's no judgment. They're great at what they do. They have an amazing team there, and they're going to treat you like royalty. So here's what I want you to do. Call 603-595-6699 today, or visit them at perfectsmiles.com. Talk to Melissa. Tell them that you heard about it on The Grace Curley Show. You want to go in for an appointment, a consultation. Get the ball rolling. That's 603-595-6699, or visit perfectsmiles.com. We'll be right back with Howie Carr.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Global unrest is battering the food supply chain and the energy markets, and it's incumbent on you to be prepared. So get ready with ReadyWise. Go to ReadyWise.com and use code Howie10 to get 10% off your next purchase. Howie, one of the senators that you've always followed closely is Senator Ed Markey from Massachusetts. And he put out a job listing yesterday. Unfortunately for you, I do not think that you meet any of these qualifications. So his office is specifically encouraging BIPOC, LGBTQ+, working class, that one you check, and other underrepresented candidates to apply. This is from the Daily Caller. So now he's asking specifically for people of color and LGBTQ+ to apply for this job. Well, that's Ed Markey.
You know what gets me is, you know, I really chuckled when I read working class, because I've said for years, whenever a Democrat says working class, what he really means is non-working class, you know?
I just didn't think any of this stuff. Like, we were just talking about this with Zohran Mamdani and the college applications. I didn't think this stuff was allowed anymore. And I feel like the Trump administration has cracked down on this, where you cannot be discriminating against candidates because, God forbid, they're white men.
Right. Well, I mean, they're going to say, well, white working class means anybody. But, you know, but again, I mean, it's a, they say working class with a wink and a nod, because no, there aren't any. It's like the Working Families Party in New York. That means the non-working families, right? They're not families either, incidentally.
One of the other things I have to tease here for you coming up on Howie's show, one of my favorites, and people know this, I've been a fan for a long time, CNN's Scott Jennings is coming on your show later today.
Right, right. We think he's going to come on at 5:30, at the bottom of the last hour. He was going to be on earlier, but he's a busy guy. But we're going to get him on, and he's just doing a fantastic job. I'm really a fan. We're all fans, I think.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. And even from the beginning, I was like, did CNN actually hire a conservative who represents conservatives and the way we think. It isn't just, you know, a Bill Kristol conservative.
Right.
But he had a great day yesterday going up against Representative Richie Torres. I'm so looking forward to that interview. Everybody out there, make sure you tune in to hear Scott Jennings on Howie's show, Howie's taking over now. I'll be back tomorrow. Keep checking out the website. Once I know about this bike washing machine, you guys will be the first to know just how much it cost you. Don't go anywhere. Howie's coming up next. The amazing